From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, New York State Senate Republicans and Democrats have victories to point to in this week's election results. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a current congressman who sounds more like a future gubernatorial candidate. And Senator Schumer wants to extend a 60-year-old financial aid program for college students. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Republicans and Democrats in the New York State Senate both have victories to point to in this week's election results. We get the latest from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Following a landslide win, former Broome County Sheriff's Deputy Fred Akshar became one of the two newest members of the state Senate.
Aye.
Your name?
Frederick James Akshar II.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
The Democratic candidate favored by Governor Cuomo, former Broome County Executive and State Motor Vehicles Commissioner Barbara Fiala, trailed in the race by more than 50 points. Cuomo, after an initial endorsement, did not help Fiala with any significant money or workers for her campaign. The chair of the state's Republican Party, Ed Koch, says just Cuomo's imprint on Fiala doomed her campaign.
This is huge. This is against Cuomo's hand-picked candidate in the Southern Tier, and the Southern Tier is saying to Cuomo, you're killing us. You're killing our jobs.
Koch says there's lingering resentment in the district over the governor's decision to ban hydrofracking of natural gas, as well as stricter gun control laws. And the GOP chair says he sees tea leaves for political races beyond next year's Senate contests.
This is really, to me, a canary in the coal mine for Governor Cuomo for 2018. He's in deep trouble. His polls show it. He cannot get his job approval numbers over 40% in poll after poll now, no matter how hard he tries.
Governor Cuomo is not popular in the Southern Tier, though he is better liked in many other parts of the state, including New York City, where most of his base supporters reside. And Democrats did win in other offices, including the Nassau County District Attorney's race and Erie County Executive. Democratic Senate leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says the Southern Tier race was in a heavily Republican district and probably was not winnable for Democrats anyway.
It was always a very, very difficult district to win. It's been in, you know, the Republican hands for over 100 years. We understood it was a very, very steep hill to climb.
She says in the open Senate seat in Brooklyn, where Democrats dominate the electorate, a Democrat, Roxanne Persaud, won. Both of the Senate seats were vacant because both of their former occupants were forced to leave after being convicted of felony corruption charges. John Sampson, a former Senate leader, held the Brooklyn seat until he was convicted of obstruction of justice for trying to prevent a federal inquiry. That probe was looking into charges that he embezzled funds he oversaw as part of a mortgage foreclosure, then tried to use the profits to finance a run for district attorney. Binghamton Senator Tom Libous was the deputy majority leader until he was convicted of lying to the FBI about trying to get special employment and other privileges for his son. In addition, the former Speaker of the Assembly is in court facing federal corruption charges, and the most recent leader of the Senate, Dean Skelos, goes on trial November 16th on charges that he monetized his office to get a job and other favors for his son. Current Senate Democratic leader Stewart-Cousins says the two newest senators, as well as the rest of the Senate, will have to do more to win back the public's trust.
We understand that people expect us to operate on a level that does not compromise their faith and trust in us.
Senate Democrats back a bill to limit lawmakers' outside income to just $12,000 a year while raising salaries and compensation to avoid any real or potential conflicts of interest. Senator Stuart Cousins says perhaps there will be more impetus in 2016 to make those changes. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week, of course, the big story is the elections, the Senate chessboard moving forward. Republicans are breathing a sigh of relief now that the numeric balance of the power in the state Senate for the time being has returned to normal with the victory of Fred Akshar in the southern tier. No surprise, really, there.
Well, no. I mean, the polls all said that the Democrat was going to get creamed. But the Democrat was chosen by, or helped to be chosen, by none other than Andrew Cuomo. And he said he was going to do everything in his power to make sure that she got elected. Well, not so fast. Apparently not. We have all suspected for a long time. I've just written a column about this, that Cuomo basically has always been delighted to have the Republicans in power so that he would not be the bad guy telling both Democratic progressive houses they couldn't spend and all the rest. His father was much the same way. Now, you know, it's pretty obvious to a lot of people, but not to everybody, that that's the case. He said he wasn't going to allow the people in both houses to draw their own districts. And then he did. You know, he signed the bill allowing them basically to do that in a reapportionment effort. So one and one and one and one, it all adds up to the fact that he wants the Republicans in power. But the fascinating thing has to do with the voters themselves in the southern tier. Because usually when you have somebody arrested and convicted on corruption charges, as exactly what happened with Senator Libous there, you know, there's some reactions. Okay, we got to throw those people out. We got to bring in a new group until the new group becomes the ones you throw out. And it didn't work that way. We used to have an engineer here, and when somebody would quit or be fired, he would yell at the top of his voice, "Next!" And so the Republicans, next, you know, if they're voting that way. More and more, it looks to me, David, that upstate and downstate are going back to the way they once were, which is New York City Assembly, Democrats. Upstate, quote, upstate, whatever that it means, north of Yonkers, and even Long Island by honorary degree, become upstate and they elect Republicans because they think that the city's going to run away with it otherwise. And that huge divide seems to be getting more pronounced now.
From the news of the elections this week to news you made with Representative Congressman Chris Gibson about a possible run for governor, certainly making noises more and more like he's going to do that in 2018. And he called Governor Cuomo a bully.
He did. You know, I said, can you win? He said he could. Look, right now, we know Chris Gibson very well here. He's a brilliant guy. He was a colonel in the Army. He did what I've always liked. He came into the Congress and he said, I'm going to term limit myself. And he's kept his word. He's term limited himself. So now he's looking at the governorship. In order to be governor in New York State, people have to know who you are. Right now, there are two people who the Republicans are looking at. Chris Gibson, a new fresh face, and Rob Astorino, who got killed in the last election, politically killed, of course. And it looks to me, reading the tea leaves, like the Republican leadership in New York State are saying, you know, it's the same old, let's get Astorino and give him another chance. One almost thinks, when one sees that, that it could be a bit of a fixed game. In any case, Andrew Cuomo knows that the third term is not going to be easy. A lot of people sitting around wondering whether he's going to run again. My own expectation is that he will, because I don't think he has anywhere else to go. He can't be in the cabinet. I've said it a million times. You did that already in a junior post, basically, you know, HUD. And they're not going to make him Secretary of State or the Attorney General in a Clinton administration. So you got to run again. There's nowhere else to go unless you want to practice law, as his father did after his own defeat. So I'm expecting he will run, and I'm expecting a third term is going to be a very close thing. Now, Gibson has a problem. If nobody knows who he is, he's got to find a way to make sure that everybody does. I know he's visiting all the Republican royalty upstate, checking in with everybody, but he better find some way of differentiating himself from Astorino, who more people know because, he ran once before, and B, he comes from Westchester, where there are a lot of people.
The trial of Sheldon Silver began this week. Alan, of course, this all stemming from the work of U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara.
Well, Preet Bharara, to me, is a hero. He took one look at Governor Cuomo ending the Moreland Act Commission, and he was clearly infuriated. He thinks that this is incestuous here, it's disgusting. And he, for want of a better word, moved the line. He said, we're going to enforce all of the laws, the theft of honest services. We're going to say one and one makes two. And he is trying to do that in court. It is not an easy job. He's going to have to prove, in order to show some kind of bribery, that there were times that people said, okay, if you do this to Sheldon Silver, then I'll give you this and you do that. Basically, that's what a bribe is. But usually to prove it, you got to have a tape recording or somebody's telephone has to be tapped or something has to be done that will allow you to do that. I don't think right now it's all that clear. They do have this doctor, good man, Columbia, who is the mesothelioma expert in the country. He had a clinic. He wanted to get money for his clinic. Everybody could approve of that. For once, state money was going to the right place. And the government is claiming that in order for him to do that, Shelley Silver asked him to send clients to Silver's law firm. And he did. But it's unclear that they have that moment when it's an exchange, when somebody says, if you do this, then I'll do that. That's what they got to prove. And there's got to be somebody on that jury who has doubts in order for at least a hung jury to occur. It seems to me that when they did the voir dire and they asked them each what they thought of the whole situation, there were jurors who said, ah, come on, that's what they all do. That's the way business is done in Albany. Well, does that mean we don't convict because that's the way business has always been done, or that we do convict based on the fact that we're disgusted?
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. Senator Charles Schumer has gone to bat for college students. He's calling on his Senate colleagues to immediately reauthorize and extend a 60-year-old financial aid program that he says has enabled millions of students to attend college. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was at the University at Albany this week when Schumer made his pitch.
Students in New York and all across the U.S. depend on the program to attend college. Schumer says the program, which pumps approximately $123 million in financial aid into colleges across New York, doesn't cost the federal government a nickel. One note, the sound quality in the college's University Hall building can be tough to make out.
Because the Perkins Loan Program is a revolving fund. As those people who are out of college pay it back, it goes into this fund to help new people.
According to Schumer's office, the federal government has not appropriated funds for the Perkins Loan Program since 2005, making it a low-cost federal program with immense benefits to students. The House of Representatives passed an extension unanimously. Now, Schumer is demanding Senate Republicans take up and immediately pass legislation to extend the program before second semester tuition payments come due. UAlbany freshman Alondra Sanchez.
Having this loan taken away from us, it's something that I can't even fathom.
Vermont Senators Patrick Leahy and Bernie Sanders and Massachusetts Senators Elizabeth Warren and Edward Markey have also joined the call to save the Perkins Student Loan Program. Leaders from several area colleges, as well as students who benefit from the loans, were in the UAlbany audience. Some joined Schumer at the podium, including Siena President Brother Ed Coughlin, who notes Perkins loans are often parts of aid packages that put Siena in reach for many students. Alicia Ouellette, president and dean of Albany Law School, says the loans are a critical part of her students' financial assistance packages.
That makes a difference for some students about whether they can attend law school or not.
120 current Albany Law students have received more than $950,000 in Perkins loans. Benny Poy is a junior at UAlbany. He tells Time Warner Cable News,
I wouldn't even be close to even possibly even being able to to pay for my education if it weren't for this loan. My family cannot afford $1,100. That's how. And the Education Opportunity Program students are all basically the same way.
UAlbany President Robert Jones added that for decades, Perkins loans have helped thousands of high-need SUNY students achieve their educational goals. And to derail the program would be nothing short of disaster. If the program is not renewed, colleges may end up owing the government money. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Changes to the 113-year-old document that guides the governance of the city of Plattsburgh, New York, were approved by voters this week. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
In March, Plattsburgh Mayor James Calnon appointed 12 city residents to a commission charged with reviewing the city charter and drafting changes to the document. After months of research and discussion, the group considered three ballot proposals, one to modernize the language, another to stagger the terms for city councilors and the mayor, and a third asking residents if the city should switch from a mayor-council to city-manager-council form of government. The third option proved to be most contentious and to some the most confusing. After the mayor offered a compromise, the commission opted to place just two questions on the ballot: modernization of the charter and staggered elections. Few residents attended the work and education sessions held by the Charter Commission, and members were apprehensive over the potential outcome of the ballot vote. Unofficial results show ballot question one, modernizing language and clarifying the powers of a mayor-council government, passed 78-21%. The second ballot question to stagger terms of city council members and the mayor was also approved, 81-18%. Commission Chair Luke Cyphers says he's surprised by the margin, but not the outcome.
The turnout was a bit better than I anticipated. I was really heartened at that margin because I think a yes vote really did indicate that you had been paying attention to our process and that you took maybe a little bit of time to see the issues and why passing a clean charter was a good idea.
Commission co-chair Teresa Bennett is not only relieved, but says the panel feels a sense of accomplishment.
So many groups have tried to update the charter over the years, and I think that we took the lessons learned from things that we felt had failed in the past and really approached it in the correct way. And it was a clear message that the language and authorities and different parts of the charter just needed to be updated.
Mayor James Calnon is not surprisingly happy with the results.
I asked the commission to take a look at making the charter understandable so that it would really be a document that would get used more, really defining roles and responsibilities, and then taking a look at the question, should we have both continuity in government as well as an annual update to who's on the town council, in staggering terms does that. And I think when you look at the results, it was kind of like people going, well, why wouldn't you do that? The voters really responded, 80-20, I think is great support. You know, these people worked very hard for months and months and really put a tremendous amount of effort and passion into their work. And I think they did a really good job, and I believe the voters indicated they agree.
A third question was ardently considered but did not appear on the ballot. The commission debated asking voters if they wanted to keep or change the city's form of government. Calnon broke the logjam by promising to propose to the Common Council a local law that will place it on the 2016 ballot.
There's a little bit more controversy with form of government, mayor, council versus city manager. There's also a lot of detail. Now that we've defined, here's the new plain language charter with staggered terms in it, then the council's already prepared what that charter would look like, whether it was a mayor, council of government, or a city manager government. So it's there. It's easy to see what the differences are because, again, it's now in very plain language and very understandable. So it gives people a chance to really look at that very specific question. Now, as to the rest of the discussion about what are the strengths and weaknesses, you know, some of the more subjective parts of this, we'll spend most of the year, I think, people who have a strong opinion one way or the other will weigh in.
According to the dictates of the commission, as soon as a vote has been completed on a ballot item, the commission dissolves.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. An anti-bullying presentation created in part by a local physical education teacher is gaining popularity across New York and the country. The program got a warm reception by middle school students recently in Fulton County. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
Mixed martial artist and Ultimate Fighting Championship fighter Tom Murphy opens his anti-bullying presentations before school audiences with a video of himself taking down opponents in the ring. When the video's over, the 6'1", 225-pound Murphy says he hates fighting.
I call it a delicious irony, and it doesn't make sense to their brains. They look at what they saw on the screen. That's bullying.
For the past 5 years, Murphy has been working with his Sweethearts and Heroes organization that he founded with South Glens Falls physical education teacher Jason Spector, giving talks to students. This fall, the 40-year-old Murphy quit his job as a railroad executive and now travels across the country with the organization. After taking selfies and giving high fives to students at Broadalbin Perth Middle School Thursday morning, Murphy commented on the effectiveness of the program.
It's not just an awareness-based message. Most anti-bullying stuff is awareness-based. Educate the kids, the perspective button. And then we say there's really sad stories attached to it. Now, don't let that happen to other kids. Don't let that happen to you. But what does that mean to a kid? It means nothing to them. You got to give them a plan, a specific plan.
Co-founder Spector, who wrestled with Murphy while they attended SUNY Brockport, said the program is more of a character education and lifestyle message.
I think we could all, no matter if my job is to drive the bus, if my job is to work in the office, if I'm a nurse, if I'm a teacher, whatever my job is, if I'm an administrator, we could all use healthy perspective. And really, you have to maintain that day after day after day. And that's a huge challenge.
During the presentation, students listened to Murphy and a handful of volunteers took part in some activities to prove his point. One pair of students dressed as superheroes were taught to intervene in a bullying situation. The students were also introduced to retired Army Sergeant Rick Yerush and his service dog, Amos. An Iraq war veteran with burns over most of his body, Yerush shared his message of not giving up hope. Students also heard from Nancy Schultz, the wife of the late Olympic gold medalist Dave Schultz, was murdered by idiosyncratic philanthropist John DuPont in 1996. The murder was the subject of last year's Oscar-nominated film, Foxcatcher. Schultz, who oversees the Dave Schultz Wrestling Foundation, flew to New York from California to see the program herself. Schultz said her husband began wrestling after experiencing bullying as a young student.
And so he started running home from school every day as fast as he could to get home. And a PE teacher saw what was going on and said, I'll make a deal with you. I'll teach you how to wrestle if you promise never to bully anybody. And he did. You know, he really did. He became a great champion, Olympic champion. And I think the rest of his life, he was always very aware of the kid that didn't fit.
For the past 3 years, students at Broadalbin Perth Middle School have participated in their own anti-bullying club. Middle school principal Wayne Bell said Thursday's program was so well received because it was brought to the school by the students.
When it's coming from students, students listen. When it's coming from a teacher, from the principal, we don't get to as many students as we'd like to. And again, as it was presented today, students are afraid to snitch on others.
For more information on the Sweethearts and Heroes program to combat bullying, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1545. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.